Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Thursday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. A day that started out pretty wet has turned out pretty nicely here. Sun shining as we approach the final hour or so of daylight today. It's going to be a little cooler, though, this evening and for a few nights. Not going to be terribly cold, but, I mean, look for temperatures in the 40s for a few nights. And that's not bad here in the middle of November. So welcome in to the Thursday Drive. Dan is in Chattanooga, where Troy, the Troy women, will be taking on UTC this evening. He will be back tomorrow. But Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer is in the studio, as he usually is on Thursdays. Ferg, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. Doing all right.
You were you told me you struggled. Your voice was a little bit of a struggle yesterday.
Yeah, you know, yesterday during the basketball game, like, I could barely get a question out to Bruce after the players after the game. So I woke up this morning feeling a lot better. Just sinus stuff. This happens to me. You know, people listen to our podcast, like, I do this like once or twice a year. It just happened to hit right now, but
Maybe the rain helped wash some of the stuff away,
yeah,
too. So.
Yeah, some rain. I think part of it for me, it was, you know, not a whole lot of sleep this weekend with the travel and forth from Houston. And then also just being on a plane usually just wrecks me in that you know, that quick turnaround. But we're doing well, and, I mean, it's been a heck of a week so far for Auburn basketball, and you know, obviously football getting back to it this weekend.
Yeah, really. We'll definitely talk both as we move on up toward 6 o'clock. I want to let you know our first basketball Tiger Takes coming up today at 5:30, as Jacob Goins spent some time with Dylan Cardwell. I saw Dylan the other day and said, hey, looking forward to having you back. You know, back with us on the Drive on Tiger Takes, and he said, yeah, he was excited about it. The tough thing is that the team is practicing while we're on the air pretty much every day.
Not today, but yeah.
Yeah, just about every day, though. They will be. So Jacob got with Dylan a little earlier. We'll have that for you at 5:30. We will also, as usual, check in with David Paschal at 5 o'clock, get his thoughts on, you know, college football, the college football playoff second week. There's some really interesting placements and questions about, you know, why teams are where they are in the rankings. Justin, I'd love your thoughts on some of these. It really appears that it's not like basketball where you know, we talked about how important it was for Auburn to be playing Houston away from Auburn, and Houston gets it where it's not a home game.
Yeah.
So it helps them in a little bit, and your competition, the level of competition, even if you have a loss, can help you.
Yes.
In basketball, in football, with the college football playoffs rankings, sure doesn't look that way.
No, it's. You know, I think my big thing with the playoff is really since it started, it doesn't seem like there's been a whole lot of consistency from year to year of like what hurts a team, what helps a team, what gets a team in, what gets a team out.
Sometimes it almost feels like from week to week there isn't consistency.
Yeah, and at least with – and I think that's why college basketball with – you know, they have net – and then they do like one reveal show in the middle of conference play where they're like, this is what the top 16 would look like if we got it right now. And then you don't hear anything until Selection Sunday. That, to me, makes a whole lot more sense in this weekly stuff. But I get it. It's a ratings thing.
Absolutely there for numbers.
Correct. Because like the NCAA tournament, you know, CBS pays – CBS and Turner pay the NCAA billions of dollars to put that on. the college football playoff is an ESPN creation, you know, and obviously there's different media partners involved with it now, but this is a TV creation, and so juicing interest in it with these ratings is just, I think it's just ridiculous, and it has been since they started doing it. I mean, they used to do it like every week. Like, at least they're going a little bit later now.
Yeah, you're right. But, I mean, it's really interesting when you look and you see four of the top five teams right now in the CFP rankings are Big Ten schools.
Yeah.
And, you know, Georgia is at number 12. And Georgia has one of the more impressive wins on the season. And their two losses are two other teams that are ranked in the top 12.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I think that should count for something. Like,
yeah, no kidding.
You shouldn't.
If not, then why schedule those games? Now, in a conference, there's not much you can do about missing some. I mean, when the conference lays out the schedule, it could be that tough. But this, the way the college football playoff rankings are looking, don't encourage anybody to play tough non-conference teams.
Correct. Yeah, and I think there's a difference, like. Like, if I remember correctly, it's like Oregon's one, right?
Right.
And Ohio State's in that group.
Oregon's one, Ohio State two, then Texas, then Penn State and Indiana before you get to BYU, and then Tennessee seven.
Okay, so if you put Oregon at one and Ohio State at two, I get it. Close game, super fun game, away from home. It makes sense for Ohio State to be there. Penn State at four. They did not look very competitive against Ohio State.
And who have they beaten?
Exactly. That's
who have they played other than Ohio State?
Right. Like, so I think that to me is puzzling. Like, Indiana, you haven't lost yet.
Right.
Like, I give them all the credit in the world. Penn State is the one that really, really baffles me. And I don't really know where they're going to run out at this point. I don't know who they have left that could trip them up. I'm not sure what their schedule looks like moving forward, but yeah, Penn State doesn't make a ton of sense. Like, you know, to me, you got Penn State with one loss, an uncompetitive loss to Ohio State. Is that nine spots better than losing to Alabama and Ole Miss on the road if you're Georgia? It's better, but is it nine spots better?
I don't even know how much better it is when they weren't competitive. Georgia's been competitive.
Correct. Yes.
I mean, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. It's crazy. I mean, because Georgia is in a – I mean, Georgia's obviously in a must-win situation Saturday against Tennessee.
Sure.
And I wonder now, with Tennessee at seven, if Georgia beats Tennessee, will that knock Tennessee out? It may.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it might.
Because, I mean, we've been thinking, boy, a two-loss SEC school is going to be in. Then we started looking at how Missouri was playing and going, well, maybe not any two-loss mm-hmm. SEC team would be in. But surely you'd figure one of the biggies would be, but Tennessee probably will be in trouble if they lose to Georgia this weekend.
Yeah, and where's Clemson at?
In the rankings?
Yeah.
Clemson is 20.
20, because they just had that recent loss as mm-hmm. well. But it's like, okay, Georgia like pasted Clemson. Like,
right.
And that's a better non-conference win than anything Penn State has. So I just
And they won at Austin.
Yes. Yeah,
the highest ranked SEC school lost at home, and
I don't have to wonder what Penn State would look like against Texas because I've seen Penn State against Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's just the comparison game just doesn't really line up there.
Yeah, but I mean, a lot of the teams that are there that are in the rankings that look like they could be in are going to play each other. You got quite a few, like I mentioned, the Georgia-Tennessee game, among others, coming up this weekend. All right, we're just getting underway here on the Thursday Drive. It's Bill and Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Drew at the controls. We'd love to hear from you. You can call us on the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number's 334-321-1390. Text us on the Drive text box, which is presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. That number is 334-564-1390. 1840, and of course, Southeastern Industrial Contractors, also the sponsor of our podcast, where you can check out the podcast of the Drive wherever you get your podcast. All right, let's start. Let's start with basketball because it is We're a day removed from Auburn winning comfortably again last night, although it got close. But Justin, if there was any question about, is Auburn still looking back at that big win over Houston because there were folks worried about a slow start? It was anything but a slow start. I mean, Auburn just came out and raced to a 22-point lead, you know, before we're at the midway point of the first half.
Yeah, 30-8 start, and then I believe Auburn won the second. Or I think Auburn scored, I had this stat today, scored 29 of the final 39 mm-hmm. in the game. So they started well and finished well, and that can overcome even the worst kind of middle for Auburn, and it was a tough middle for them,
but sure. But it wasn't a terribly sloppy, like, turnover-prone.
Missed shots.
Auburn just missed some shots. And
Kent State
Kent
started hitting
made
some.
Some.
Yeah, and some tough ones, too.
Yeah, they did.
They had some guys out there that were hit some really good shots. And, yeah, I mean, I think it's really telling. I mean, there were some people – I know there were some Auburn fans last night at different spots that kind of felt down by the game or something like that. I'll just say this. This team scored 79. They beat a pretty good Kent State team that's going to be in the mix in the MAC. They beat them by 23. And they couldn't hit anything from deep. And these were open shots. I mean, they were only –
they had some really good looks.
I would say, you know, Bruce said after the game, like, of the 18 three-pointers they missed, 15 or 16 of them, you're like, yeah, I'll take that shot. Mm-hmm. Maybe only a couple of them were rushed or were you know, not the ideal play in that situation. And that's the thing. It's like some nights you're just not going to hit them from deep. Like, and it felt like this game was going to be this could be a cold shooting night game for Auburn, because in that 30-8 start, they were like 2 of 7 from deep.
Yep.
So like even when they were getting off to a really good start on offense, they weren't hitting those shots. And so when inevitably Kent State adjusts, they start playing a zone, making it a little bit harder for Jedi Maroon and those guys to get on the inside. What instead happens is you just kind of stay in that rut. The good news is I think Auburn hit 4 of their final 7 from deep, so at least finished with a decent
I know they
mark.
Hit 3 of their last 6 because I remember 3 for 18. Maybe they'd been 2 for 17 and hit the one to make them 3 for 18. So that's probably right.
And so, I mean, it just kind of shows you the way this team can play. And you know, if you can beat a team by 23 shooting 25% from deep, that says a lot about who you are as an offense, and it says a lot about who you are as a defense. You know, it felt like Kent State hit some really good shots out there, and they had their run in the middle of the game for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But you go back and look, I mean, Auburn didn't let them do much of anything on offense. They shot worse from deep than Auburn did.
Oh, you're right.
They shot a whole lot worse from the field. Auburn didn't foul them. They didn't send them to the free throw line. I thought it was a really, really good game from Auburn on the defensive end. And then offensively, it's just, I mean, Jani Broom took over. Chaney Johnson's just, this is what Chaney Johnson is.
He has been a great story this year. I mean, he's always been fun to watch because mm-hmm. he's so athletic. But the confidence, that to me is the difference.
Yeah.
Because a year ago, he could do these things, but it just felt like he wasn't sure if he could do them at this level. Now he knows he can. He's bigger. He's stronger. He's confident. He's gonna be tough for anybody when you've got a Jani. When you've got Jani there along with Chaney, that's gonna be tough for just about anybody to handle there in the front court.
And I know I haven't been on the show since the Houston game, but like I think when you can do what he did against Houston, you can do it against anybody.
Mm-hmm.
If you can do that against Houston away from home, he has the ability to have that kind of performance every night. I mean, he just does. He's a force on the boards. He's really active on defense.
He's a pretty good passer,
offense,
too.
His offense is great. His passing was great. How about that from Auburn last night? It was 26 assists, something like that?
23, and 12 of them came from – there were 4 each for Jani, Chaney, and Dylan.
Yeah, good inside-out play. Guys just making the heads-up plays and passing and just sharing it, you know? This is a team that realizes that it's not always going to be your night. Saturday night against Houston, it was very much Jani Broom and Tahad Pettiford's night.
Mm-hmm.
Last night, it was still Jani. It's going to be Jani most nights,
sure.
If not every night. But then you saw Chaney get more and more involved, and you saw Chad Baker Mazzara
CBM early
great,
on,
great
really.
Start. Yeah. So, I mean, they share the ball. They're very confident that where they go with the ball, that guy can score. You know, that guy can make something happen with it. And, I mean, I said this heading into the season for Auburn, and I think these first few games have kind of shown it. I thought this team was deeper than the one they had last year. I thought it had the potential to be better on offense and defense. I think check, check, check so far through three games. And you're seeing it in these types of performances. And I even think this is about the Houston game. There's a lot from the Houston game they could have done better. And they still won. They came back from down 9 with 15 minutes left and beat a Houston team away from home like that, where you could say this, this, and this could have been better. I feel that way about this team. I mean, they won by 23 last night, and they could have played better.
And it felt like, they're just it's just okay.
Yeah, and I'll also say this. I mean, I can think of four or five shots that almost went all the way down and rimmed out. If those go in, this is a blowout from the word go.
Oh, you're right. It could have been 90 to 50-something.
And Kent State would have never had a shot to come back.
Yep.
And so, you know, that's the thing. It's just those are good looks. They're not always going to fall. But if the process is good, don't play the results as much. If the process is good, and I thought the process was really good for Auburn last night on offense.
Well, I mean, something you always look at is, turnovers. And Auburn had, what, six?
Yep.
I think six turnovers last night. This team doesn't turn the ball over very much.
They don't turn the ball over very much, and they're not fouling nearly as much in years
has
past.
Has Denver had a foul yet?
Denver Jones has not had a foul, and how
he
about this?
He's not had a foul through three games.
J.P. Pegues has not had a foul, except for that tech. J.P. Pegues has not turned the ball over yet this year.
Hmm.
You know? And, again, it's those two guys I think are great examples. Is like, we know they can hit shots when they're open. And we know they can catch fire. Both of those guys can. Their stat lines aren't flashy so far this year, but you dig deeper and you're like, they don't hurt you at all. They are just positive, positive, positive.
And the defense?
Oh, yeah. Wow. Deborah Jones' defense is
phenomenal.
Remarkable. Yeah. And I think J.P. Pegues has done a great – to play the top of a defense, to be the point man, and to not commit a foul, a real one, through three games, and then not commit a turnover either. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can accidentally – get either of those. And I think if you're Todd Bedford, you look up and say, man,
you know how many turnovers Denver has had in three games?
I think one.
He's had two.
Two, okay.
So, I mean, still, shame on him for two turnovers, and he's playing point as well as the two. What's really cool, I was keeping up with it while things were going last night, and I'm thinking, okay, Denver needed to score a couple of more points, and he hit a three to keep him in averaging double figures. And Miles Kelly was 1 point short. Because I look, and today, yes, Auburn has five players averaging double figures, and Miles Kelly is a point short of averaging double figures. He's averaging 9.7 through
three games. And you know that dude can get it going. It's not always going to be those dudes' nights, but I do think they've done a really good job of buying in on defense, taking care of the ball, and the shooting's going to come. And I think Chaney Johnson said it best last night where he was like, look – you know, we're not always going to hit shots, but if we play defense like this, the other team can't win.
Yeah, you play defense, don't turn it over. You've got a great shot, and they've got enough guys that can not just make shots, but that can create and get shots. I mean, Auburn's not a bunch of guys that they have to be. You know, they have to be completely wide open.
No,
they've got guys that give them the ball. They can make plays. They can create and make shots for themselves.
Yeah,
that's something I think a lot of teams don't have as many players that can do that. I don't think.
Yeah, they don't have to be schemed open. Mm-hmm. They can score one on one. Here's a fun stat that I found today: Jani Broome and Chaney Johnson. If you combine their shooting this so far this season, they are shooting 80% at the rim and 85% in the paint.
Yeah, yeah. Because
they don't miss.
Most of Jani's misses have been threes.
Yeah. I mean, and then Chaney is a perfect 7-for-7 on shots in the paint this year. Those little, not quite mid-range, but those little, like, kind of half-post touches that he hits, he's perfect on them this year. And when you have two guys like that on offense who can get it, and you know Denver Jones, Chad Baker-Mazzara, Miles Kelly, Tahad Pettiford, J.P.
Yep.
Pegues, any one of those guys can catch the ball and go off at any moment. You know, that is a team that's going to get very, very dangerous as the season moves on. KenPom has Auburn as the number two offense in America. I believe that is the highest they've ever been. And we already know they're highest they've ever been at number one in the country. Even with Houston, by the way, blowing the doors off of Louisiana last night, Auburn stayed at number one. Another interesting stat from this game to show that how good Jani Broome is. So on Evan Maia, they have a ranking of like best players in the country.
Right.
And the player rating for Jani Broome, the gap between him and Braden Smith from Purdue, who's number two, is the same as the gap between number two and number 19 in the country.
Wow. Now that's how significant.
Dominant,
yes.
That's how dominant he's playing on both ends of the floor. And it's just this team has so many weapons. So many weapons. And they were missing two guys yesterday as well.
Yeah, they are fun. One more opportunity before they go to Maui next Monday night against North Alabama. We need to get to our first break of the show. Love for you to join in again, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline as we continue with the Thursday Drive.
This is Lee County Revenue Commission.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email thedrive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio, and Drew at the controls. Justin, before we get into football, yesterday was the first day of the signing period for all sports other than football, and Auburn today officially announcing two signees as they're gonna have a lot of holes to fill for next year.
Yeah, and could be a pretty big weekend coming up for basketball recruiting. Sebastian Williams-Adams set to announce. Bryson Tiller announces on Saturday now. And then there could be some other ones in the next couple weeks. But, yeah, a couple of big pickups there for sure. I mean, we talked about Simon Walker. I think I was here when Simon Walker committed.
Yeah, it's been a while.
It's been a while. But, you know, you have a guy in Caden Magwood that, yeah, I did a breakdown for him on the Observer this week. He's Tahad-ish in terms of his play style. This is a guy that true combo guard, bucket getter, all three levels. Got a crazy good ability to shoot off the dribble. No, that's probably his weapon of choice. He shot over 50% from was deep
that,
in AAU.
I wondered if that number was right when I saw that.
That was on the Adidas circuit this year. Yeah.
Wow.
Crazy numbers. You know, he I really like his ability. He's got a good mid-range game. You know, gets to the rim pretty well, can play above the rim, kind of like Tahad there. Active on defense, averaged nearly two steals a game. So he's a guy that I think very much fits the type of player they're wanting to get moving forward. These guys that we were talking about earlier, bucket getters, like guys who can just take dudes one-on-one and score and not have to be schemed open. A really, really dangerous player, and I think he's going to be quite the fit, and, you know, if Auburn brings back Pettiford next year, you look at him sharing a backcourt. Like, together, it would be a really fun lineup because you'd have two guys that have that are very, very similar in the way they play.
Yeah, and it was interesting. I mean, last night, I couldn't really tell who was really running the point some of the time. When you'd have
that's by design,
Tahad and JP or Denver. I mean, when you had a combo of
Miles,
two of them.
Miles will trigger plays sometimes as well. Chad will trigger plays at times. Yeah, I mean, I think just be a weapon. Be tough to scout. Be tough to prepare for. And that's, you know, and you're going to have to do that again, you know, moving forward. It is really interesting, though, with this team that Auburn's got. You know, I think ultimately Auburn would get 4 to 6 guys in this class, freshmen, like this class, and then see what you can get in the portal after that. You can build a pretty good class. Build a pretty good team. It'll be a reset, but it'll be a pretty fun team.
Yeah, I would think that the what you really be looking for in the portal, if you could find it, would be front court help, because it's less likely that you're going to get an impact guy out of high school in the front court.
Yeah,
those guys are pretty darn rare.
And Auburn doesn't really have a ton of those guys on their board, or at least they haven't been linked to a lot of them. They have some forwards. I mean,
yeah,
Sebastian Williams-Adams is one. Tiller would be another one. But, you know, I'm thinking for Auburn. And I've said this for a while now. Excuse me. I think the thing for Auburn in the portal is that this upcoming offseason, you're going to be able to walk into the transfer portal, go to any center you want.
And absolutely, say
Jani Broome, Walker Kessler, you could be next.
Yep.
And that is a sales pitch that is untouchable.
Yeah. Because, I mean, look at their numbers before they got to Auburn and then at Auburn.
Yeah, you know, Kessler becomes defensive player of the year, first-round pick, NBA starter. Broome becomes an All-American, mm-hmm. and, you know, SEC player of the year contender, national player of the year contender potentially this year. You know, there's not going to be very many places who can say, we can do that with you. No. Auburn has proof, and they've done it now back-to-back times.
And that's very fortunate that they have that, because you're right. I think it's much easier to be able to add youngsters, high school guys, or find some other players in the portal yep. that can help you at some of the other positions. But
remember when this was a place that was only known for developing guards?
Yeah.
It's changed.
Well, I remember when it was changed. A place that was not known for developing anything basketball.
True. But I'm just thinking, at least within the Pearl era.
Right.
Like early first half of the Pearl era, it was a lot of guards. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of backcourt players. And they still got that, but their ability to turn players into, you know, some really good finished products in the front court, center for sure. But I mean, I'd also look at what you've been able to do with Chaney Johnson at power forward, and you can make that pitch happen for sure.
Yep. So it will be interesting. We'll talk a little football recruiting and football as the Tigers back in action after an open date. When we come back, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Again, join us 334-321-1390 as we continue with the Thursday Drive.
Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill and Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio. I'd love for you to join in anything on your mind sports-wise. We talked basketball pretty much the first half hour, shifting to football. The Tigers, after an open date following that really tough loss to Vandy, are, you know, now heading into their final three games of the season. Home games against Louisiana Monroe and Texas A&M before a trip to Tuscaloosa to wind up the season at the end of this month. But recruiting continues to just roll on. Auburn has added two more commitments in the last 2 days.
Yeah, they get a new corner today, flipping in from USC, Arnaud.
Shamar
mm-hmm. Arnaud, and then picking up Derek Smith's twin brother, Eric.
Which we talked about it a little yesterday. It's really odd because
how many twins do you have a 5-inch gap
difference
between,
in size?
I've never heard of that before. But another weapon, a wide receiver, and then, like, he might not be as highly rated as the other ones, but shoot, you'll take a 6'6" receiver and
every day.
Out.
Yeah, especially when you've got other guys. It's not like you're taking him,
correct,
and he's got to come in and, you know, be your number one or a starter immediately.
Yeah, and you know, for Auburn, it's really impressive, if not just completely bewildering to me, where it's like they just haven't had this drop off yet in recruiting. No. I think of so much of this season for Auburn, and this might be, you know, a reason for Auburn fans to be like, hey, it could get better. So much of this season I thought could have followed the Billy Napier at Florida track,
mm-hmm.
and obviously Florida got better. It's gotten better this year, and they're keeping Billy Napier and all that, but
But they look
towards the end, they started bleeding guys. Auburn getting
Williams
and Jamonte Waller out of it. But it was like the Arkansas game last year was the day they flipped Waller, I believe, that night. So it's just like Florida was already bleeding dudes mm-hmm. at this point.
Oh, yeah. Auburn hasn't done that before November. I mean,
right.
They started sliding. And the thing is, the product on the field, too, it didn't look like everybody was all in. Look, Auburn hasn't won a lot of these ball games, but there has been no lack of effort.
Yeah, the buy-in's there. This roster and this recruiting class especially is definitely buying what this coaching staff is selling.
Mm-hmm.
It's up to this coaching staff and it's up to these guys to figure out how to build on that moving forward and turn around, because I would have, you know, if you would have told me heading into the season, like, hey, Auburn's going to be, you know, 3-6
that's what it is.
3-6 heading into the final three games of the season, and they've gotten worse on offense this year. I was like, oh, this is you're in panic mode. You're in free fall yep. mode at this point. And there is some panic and there is some fear because you have played poorly this season. But I mean, it could be a whole lot worse. And if you're preaching patience with a recruiting-based rebuild, you're at least delivering the results and off the field. And that's no guarantee of anything. You know, we all watched the Jimbo Fisher era at Texas A&M. Mm-hmm. But you need to have it. And it's better than, you know, even where Florida was, where you're sitting there like, okay, you got to get better, and I don't know how.
Yeah, Florida kept losing players. I mean, Auburn's up to number three in the composite rankings for this class. And, I mean, as we said, there are 28 commitments now for this year, and really, really looking good, especially in the secondary. I mean, I saw that Donovan Starr is going to be back at Auburn this weekend. I mean, that's a guy that, you know, people have been trying to flip away, and I mean, there have been quite a few players people have been concerned about. Obviously, Deuce Knight last week at Ole Miss at that huge win over Georgia. I think people have thought that, oh, by now he'd be a flip to Ole Miss, especially after Caleb Cunningham did.
Yeah, Caleb Cunningham flipping from Bama to Ole Miss. Yeah, that's that. You know, you're gonna have to go all the way to the finish line with that one, and you're gonna have to go all the way to the finish line with a lot of these kids.
I believe Deuce is supposed to be. He's expected to be back in Auburn each of the next two ball games this Saturday and next week.
Yeah, and that's big. That's big to have. Right? And that's my thing with Deuce Knight. I don't think Deuce Knight's gonna be your starter next year.
No, I don't either.
But you want to have, like, you don't know what the future quarterback looks like if you don't get him, right?
You'd love to have somebody that you feel like, you know, after a year they're ready to go, instead of we got to plug another starting quarterback in every single year, because you're not going to hit on every one, obviously.
Correct. So, you know, for Auburn, I think, you know, moving forward, you know, down the stretch, is you can't pack it in. You can't have one of these games. Like, to their credit, the Georgia game got out of hand in the second half, but it never felt like they were just getting absolutely pasted.
No,
the way Georgia, I think, just Georgia was just clearly better and played like it. They have not thrown in the towel, given up, packed it in at any point this season. They can't afford to do that down the stretch, because you at least need to have something that you can sell and spin.
Right.
And if you've got a team full of players that aren't excited about the future and they're not continuing to play all the way to the end, yeah, that could scare some folks off. And it could also make you wonder who's going to stay. Because, you know, Freeze talked about it earlier this week, and it's 100% true. Like, they're going to have to re-recruit this roster.
Yeah, he said, don't think that they're not getting calls.
Absolutely.
No, I mean, you know they are. Somebody players asked, everywhere, but especially at schools that aren't performing as well as they'd been expected to.
Somebody asked me for the mailbag that goes out tomorrow, like, hey, who do you think could be targeted? And I'm like, and I said, I'm not trying to be funny and I'm not trying to be flippant here, but like, anybody who has eligibility left and has been a good player at Auburn, somebody's gonna call them and get in their ear and say, hey, you want to keep playing for that team? You want to keep doing that? Why don't you come over here? Why don't you come over here and play? We'll get you hooked up. You're gonna win more games over here. Like, it's easy. And I'm not saying Auburn's going to have a bunch of kids go do that, but like, they are going to hear that. They heard that last year. They heard it last year. They're definitely going to hear it this year if you've taken a step back this season. And it's even tougher to, you know, convince people. And, you know, that's my thing with Auburn moving forward. It's like, you don't want to go into year three of a coaching tenure and your best-selling point right now is hope. Oh, it'll get better at some point. But it's better than looking and saying you don't have any hope.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that there's going to be a whole lot. I mean, unless Auburn closes it out, you know, really strong, and as crazy as this sounds, they may. I mean, they're capable of doing it. They've been in every game except that Georgia game, with a chance to win.
I
don't think any of the three remaining games are unwinnable.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, if this is the team to beat Alabama and Tuscaloosa for the first time since 2010, I will be beyond shocked. But I don't think they're going to go in there and necessarily get blown out. They might, but like, I wouldn't expect it, and I wouldn't expect that with the A&M game either. I have seen A&M's a really good football team, and they got a great coaching staff, and they've done really well this season. I have also seen A&M struggle at times with some teams that aren't playing as well as them, and I've seen Auburn kind of punch above their weight, you know, at times this season. So, especially on defense,
the thing that can't happen is they really need to play well Saturday. They really do. Yeah. I mean,
no, you can't have a sleepy game.
No.
And you definitely can't have a loss. But like, you can't have
A loss would be devastating.
A loss would, you know, a loss would people be looking around and start asking some really tough questions. Mm-hmm. Really, really tough questions.
They should win this one, though. I mean, ULM, yeah. ULM got off to a nice start.
Yeah, you got to look at who they beat. You got to look at who they played. Right. They've lost three in a row. And I believe the last time I checked, it was like ULM's like 115th in the country in total offense, like yards per play.
They can't. They're awful. They're averaging 128 yards a game passing.
Yeah, they got a good running back.
They do.
And their defense. And their defense has been playing better than I thought. Like, it wasn't last year, but I think it was 2 years ago. Like, ULM had the worst defense in America. Maybe the last time I'll.
They're better. Them. Look, they're better than they.
They got a middle of the road defense,
and they've got a. And look, they're playing to become bowl eligible. I mean, they're going to come in here thinking, look, here's an Auburn team. It's 3-6. You know, maybe we can catch them by surprise. It's an early game.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's the thing. Auburn needs to put that, just go ahead and put that out.
Yeah,
as quickly as
it kind of strikes me. It kind of strikes me as like. If you remember last year, Auburn goes and hammers Arkansas, and then Arkansas, we all thought Pittman's fired at that point. Then the next week, they play FIU, I think, and they are it's an ugly, ugly game all the way through. And I think Arkansas ends up pulling away, but that's something I think like Auburn has to avoid, like having one of those games, because otherwise you're going to be sitting there being like, okay, what? You know, what's going on? Is this going to get better? There's hope. There's always going to be hope to get better, especially with the way you're recruiting. But, you don't want to be two years into a tenure and say, okay, we're losing games to teams we shouldn't be losing to ever.
Right.
And blowing games that we should have won. And then it's like, okay, well, how is this just necessarily going to get better with better talent? That's a tough question. That's a really, really tough question. You don't want to be in that position if you're the coaching staff.
No, you're absolutely right. And then Saturday, the question right now is who's going to be a quarterback. I mean, we don't know. I didn't realize that Peyton hadn't even practiced last week until Hugh mentioned that Monday. Then Tuesday, Peyton's I feel good to go. He said that
he was going to be fine after the Vandy game too. So
yeah, but I mean, he'd gone through it, but he was out there with the first group
right
on Tuesday afternoon. But then when Hugh says Wednesday that Peyton didn't come through it the way they would have liked, that to me says he's probably not going to be good to go Saturday.
I don't think so. No availability report this week because it is not an SEC game.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, gun to my head, I think you probably see a different quarterback out there starting Saturday. I'd be surprised.
I would think that Peyton might be there as an emergency, maybe, if he dresses out. You better not need that.
To me, this is a situation where if your quarterback was 100% good to go and you feel like, hey, we still have a chance to make a ball game, let's keep winning. Then it's like that might be the only scenario where you're thinking, okay, let's not go ahead and turn it over to a young kid and try to figure something out for the future. The fact that the situation feels like it calls for, okay, let's look at somebody else. Peyton Thorne's not going to be here for much longer. And he's not 100%. It just makes me think,
it a much easier decision.
You would think, but yeah, here we are on Thursday, Bill, and we don't know. We have no idea.
And the other thing is, I thought it was interesting Monday when Hugh Freeze said that Walker worked last week and threw the scrimmage winning touchdown pass to an unknown receiver.
But, could be anybody.
McConico. But then Walker was back in a scout jersey on Tuesday. I wonder if that scout jersey has come off, because here's an opportunity. You can at least get to look at him with some fans in the stands.
Yeah.
And not worry about losing his red shirt.
I'm not a football coach and I never will be, but like if I was a football coach in this situation, I'd at least, if I got the opportunity on Saturday, I would just see what you got.
Yeah. I mean,
see where he is.
Obviously, Hank would, if Peyton's not the guy, Hank should be your starter, and I'd stick with him. I'm not a proponent. A couple of people have called in and said, oh, let's just rotate him. No.
Go win the game.
That may give you a chance to lose the game.
Yeah, go win the game.
You don't want to do that. Yeah, but you'd love to have the game in hand.
There's nothing I've seen about Auburn this season where I think you can just assume that things are going to go well on offense.
No, you're right. But you'd love to have the game in hand, I think, and then see how Walker, you know,
that would
just,
be the scenario I would run. That would be the thing I would like. Best case scenario, Auburn's defense comes out there, balls out against a limited ULM offense. Offense gets to move the ball, take advantage, get some points on the board. You're in the second half. You're up by multiple scores. You feel good about the game. You know, give the crowd that shows up to something to cheer about.
Oh, they go, ooh, there's somebody we haven't
seen.
They'll
be excited. They will be excited. There will be a nice applause and all that, and then you can see it. And if he goes out there and looks like
he's number 9, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. If he goes out there and lights it up, you're like, okay, well, okay, let's see. It gives you something interesting to think about and look ahead moving forward. And if not, it's just okay. All right, we know where we stand right now. It's probably gonna be an offseason where you go into the portal. Wait, move on from there.
I cannot picture a way where it's not an offseason.
Yeah, that was a question. That was another question I got from the mailbag this week. And my take on this is. Because the question, and it's a good one, it's like, well, what, you know, these guys are recruited here to do something. Like, are you eventually going to play one of those guys? I was like, yes, that would be the goal. But you're about to have your fourth straight losing season. You have gone backwards in your second year as a head coach. There is going to be pressure on you to win next year and show improvement.
The offense needs to be.
I'm not saying they got to win
drastically.
10 games. I'm not saying they would win better. 10 games, but they cannot have another year like this.
No.
Period.
No.
Period. They cannot do what they have done the last 2 years. And in that case, I don't see how you enter a season with that pressure on you looking at it and say, hey, kid who's never played this position before at a high level, go for it. We're trusting you. Mm-hmm. This is your job. I have a really hard time believing that.
No, I mean, I think you have to have a proven commodity there at quarterback. And then, hey, if somebody who is a returnee beats him out, great. Because you know he's better than that.
And if you get Deuce Knight and he comes in and he looks like you know, trying to think, if he looks like Jameis Winston right off the bat, and you're like, that's the best freshman quarterback I've seen here in a long time, or just period. Like, okay,
fine,
go for it. But you can't go in and say, all right, well, maybe this kid who has never done it before is our best option, and he needs to be our best option.
Mm-hmm. When you haven't seen him really in any. Crucial situations or against this kind of competition.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
All right, let's get to our final break of hour number 1. Don't forget, coming up in hour number 2, we've got David Pascal joining us at the top of the hour from Chattanooga. We'll get his thoughts on this week's matchups and more college football. And then at the bottom of hour number 2, it's our first basketball Tiger Takes with Dylan Cardwell. So, around those before and after, we can take your phone calls, 334-321-1390, as we continue with the Thursday Drive.
At ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Drive. Final couple of minutes of hour number 1 here on this Thursday afternoon. While we've got a little bit of time, Justin, talk about what you've got going at the Observer, what you've had this week, what's coming up, and how folks can access it if they're not getting it already.
Yeah, auburnobserver.com. Check it out. We had a huge, huge week last week. A lot of people coming on board basketball.
At the price you were offering.
At the price, too. The price and basketball. I mean, we couldn't ask for a better week.
No kidding.
We timed it up pretty well. But you can come join us. We still had some people sign up this week after the sale. So $60 a month or $60 a year gets you in. A lot of Auburn basketball right now. Auburn football this weekend as well. Mailbag out tomorrow. Dan and I will have our podcast come out probably sometime tomorrow afternoon. We will talk about the Auburn-Kent State game from basketball, and we will look ahead to Auburn-ULM and football. AuburnObserver.com. Sign up there.
Yeah, I mean, great stuff. And yes, I say I couldn't imagine folks not wanting to take advantage of the deal that you had, especially at the time that it was coming out with Auburn basketball. Talk a little bit about your trip to Houston. How did things go for you on the trip out there? I mean, obviously, it's fun when you get to go see a game like that. Man, it felt like you're watching a game deep in the tournament is the way it felt.
No, it was the best basketball game I've ever covered, and just so well played. The energy was great. Mm-hmm. The atmosphere was great. It was a whole lot of fun. The trip itself was kind of funny. I covered Auburn High's playoff win last week against Bob Jones on Friday night, and then I got done. And then got in my car and drove to the airport. And then I had a 6 a.m. flight from Atlanta to Houston that didn't turn around. I got to Houston and just kind of killed time, got to my hotel room, took a nap, and then rode right to the drove right to the arena and, covered a great game. So it was a pure business trip, but I mean that game it lived up to the hype and then some. Very, very rarely do you have a game number one versus number two in KenPom. Neutral site game, all that. Early season, weird stuff happens in college basketball early season, but for it to deliver like it did, man, it was so much fun. So much fun.
That's great. Hey, we're halfway done here on the Thursday Drive. David Paschal from the Chattanooga Times Free Press joins us when we come back in hour number two, so stick with us.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two here of the Thursday Drive. With Bill, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio. Drew is at the controls. Second hour of the show, as usual, brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. We're going to get to our first guest of the hour, David Paschal from Chattanooga, here in just a couple of minutes. But first, we'll get to the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, and welcome in Rain Man. Hey, Rain Man.
Good evening, gentlemen.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I know you got David waiting, so I won't be long. I'm going to make two observations.
All right.
The first is there's a high degree of probability, in my opinion, we finished the season 4-8, which means we will have two more losses and two less wins in two seasons under this head coach than the last head coach, whom I'm told by many people around town is the worst head coach ever in the history of ever. And yeah. I don't know how you could do two games worse than the worst head coach ever in the history of ever and not also be considered maybe the worst head coach ever. But moving on, I want to talk about this faking injuries to slow down the game thing.
Mm-hmm.
I've been doing some research, and I can't find exactly, and maybe you'll know this, it says in 1947, 1948, the Big Ten first began experimenting with timeouts for injuries.
Right.
And players having to sit out a play after they were treated on the field.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if there was other places, how long that's been a rule. But would it not be possible just to say, okay, that's fine. We can't call you an injury faker, but you can sit out three plays.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, the way to try to get this under control. You've got to
sit out a few extra plays. Do you sacrifice your best defensive lineman for three whole plays?
I would, you know, my thought to make it even easier where you're not even having to count plays is just the rest of the series.
I've thought about that.
If you go down, then you can't come back in until the next time that your team either has the ball or is on defense.
Yeah, and if it's a three and out series or a 15-play drive, that makes
Tough.
A big difference.
Absolutely.
So that's what I think we should do. I'm with you on that. Something is, we don't have to go dramatic with it. You just add more plays out, sit out a series, sit out a certain number of plays, something.
Oh, I agree.
And we could fix that. Are we developing any of our young quarterbacks for the future, or are we just going to get a portal quarterback every year now?
They want to develop them. That's one of the things we were talking about a little while ago, Justin. And when you've got a situation that Auburn has right now, it appears that, I mean, I know that Hugh Freeze and Ken Austin are trying to develop the quarterbacks they have, but I just
think the timeline, it's just you're going to have so much pressure on you to win because of, like you were saying earlier, how rough the record has been the last couple seasons. I don't think you're going to want to trust an inexperienced quarterback with that.
But
isn't good development time for them when you're blowing out school 73-3 and 42-19, and maybe this Saturday?
Should be, and if this Saturday isn't one time where you see some young quarterbacks, then that means they have no faith in these guys being their future.
In any of them. That's not good.
No, you're right.
Hey, you guys have a good one. We'll see how it goes this weekend.
All right, Rain Man, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
We will get back to your calls a little later, because right now we're going to head to the Drive Hotline and welcome in our good friend from Chattanooga from the Times Free Press, and just wrapping up his show a few minutes ago on WGOW, that is David Pascal. Hey, David, how you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful. Hope you guys are.
Doing well. I mean, a lot of excitement around basketball here. Football hasn't been what people had hoped, but basketball got off to a pretty rousing start with that game out in Houston over the weekend.
Oh, that was a lot of fun, and the atmosphere, I don't know how many, I guess I'd seen like 2,500 Auburn fans made the trip, and so that's pretty cool. And, of course, last night was a weird game with the way Auburn just shot out of a cannon and then just started missing, and it got weird for just a second before they put that thing away. But, Alabama and Auburn, they're talking about those two right now, but, I think Tennessee will – have its moments. Certainly Kentucky got a huge win for the SEC in Atlanta the other night. And how wild is Mark Pope? And just, he is like the exact opposite of Calipari. He lets a player give the opening statement in the news conference, whereas Cal would just ramble and ramble and ramble. So apparently Pope did that at BYU. He let the players have the first say at a news conference. Very different.
Yeah, and the crazy thing for me, I don't know if you know the story. Did you know that John Calipari, in his entire time at Kentucky, he only did like one pregame press conference that wasn't mandated by like the NCAA or the SEC? Like, it was always just treating it like an NBA team forever. I'll just let an assistant go talk. And so, yeah, night and day. I mean, Kentucky feels like an actual college basketball program again, which is pretty wild to see.
And you could tell how much that meant to Pope, and he knew how much he had to win that fan base over, and giving the high fives to the fans in Atlanta. I mean, that was a pretty neat scene.
No question. And he's much more passionate. Wears his heart on his sleeve. And Kentucky fans are really, really excited right now. And that was a great way for him to make an early statement.
Well, and Justin came up with that. Justin retweeted one of the funniest pictures I've seen of last night, of Chady Johnson going up for a dunk and Chad Baker Mazzaro like celebrating too. It's like one of the wildest looking photos you will ever see.
This team just has maximum amounts of fun whenever they can. Like it is they're a joy to watch and a joy to cover. And yeah, I mean, I know it's a lot of fun to see, on TV, because in person they're a trip in and of themselves.
Yeah, and sometimes on TV you might miss some of the things. I mean, I'm sure you've seen the highlights. I miss Chad grabbing a couple of fries.
Yeah, Chad's the fries off the front. Chad trying to high-five Bruce in the middle of the play.
Bruce it's fun, and it's of course it's more fun when you're winning. But this is a fun bunch to watch, and they're going to win. They're going to win a lot of ball games because they've got so many different weapons besides the All-American Jahni Broome.
You know, and it's funny y'all are bringing that up, and because I mean it is a very intimate setting. I mean, Neville Arena is just an awesome place for basketball, and it's funny because I haven't gone to Auburn. Beard Eves, didn't have that, but I've taken my kids back to some Auburn basketball games and got to experience one right before COVID where Auburn beat LSU like 92-91 on that McCormick floater in overtime right as the game. I mean, it was just a phenomenal game, especially to take kids to. But, covering Tennessee at the Food City Center, that's like a really nice 21,000-22,000 seat arena. And of course Tennessee gets to draw from Knoxville, which is obviously larger than Auburn as a community, but they're two very different settings, but two very loud arenas and really two really neat places to watch a basketball game.
Yeah, you're not kidding. I mean, it's great to have a situation like that. Yeah, Beard Eves was cavernous. It was great for concerts, but the acoustics were almost too good for basketball.
Yeah, I saw a couple of concerts that were hit or miss. REM played there when I was a student there, and for some reason the acoustics, that must have been an off night for the acoustics.
Huh. Because, well, I wonder if how full was it, David?
It was full. Huh. I had seen REM earlier that tour at the Grand Ole Opry, and it was an incredible show. And at Beard Eve's, it just didn't sound quite as good.
So much more intimate. Yeah, you're not kidding.
Right.
It's funny to say that. Yeah, the Grand Ole Opry is so, but compared to the Coliseum, it is. And let's talk a little football. Last week, a couple of statements. There were huge questions. When was Lane Kiffin? Was he going to be able to win the big one? And they answered that. And then Alabama, emphatically said, hey, don't count us out with that decisive win down in Baton Rouge. Those two, along with I thought South Carolina's play again. South Carolina is a team, David, they're looking at themselves going, man, we're so close. They're a couple of plays away from being in the definitely in the college football playoff picture.
Oh yeah, I mean, they're, like you said, they're a couple of plays away from being a one loss team, because they had LSU and mm-hmm. and they gave Alabama all they wanted. Now Ole Miss was the one team that really kind of thoroughly whipped them pretty good, and Beamer admitted afterwards that they just played lousy. But and obviously gave credit to Ole Miss. But yeah, South Carolina, you think about it, Clark Lee is probably your favorite for coach of the year. You think about Kiffin now making a charge, and you think about Beamer making a charge. But, you know, back to last week's action, I just thought Alabama, the fact that Jalen Milroe has now rushed for 340 yards and 8 touchdowns the last 2 years against LSU is just mind-numbing that they have not been able to do anything to stop him. And yeah, Ole Miss is your flavor of the week. They finally broke through, and especially just the way that game transpired. I mean, they're down 7-0 after an early dart interception 2 minutes into that game, and to outscore Georgia 28-3 the rest of the way is just something nobody saw coming.
No, and this Georgia and their inability to have a consistent running game, and now turnovers coming from Carson Beck has made it difficult, and they find themselves all the way down at number 12 in the latest CFP rankings.
Yeah, and I just think it's a deal where, like you mentioned, they've just been and people don't want to give too much sympathy for Georgia because of how well they recruit, but I mean, it really is wild that all five of their offensive linemen have been in and out of that lineup due to injuries. And it's really interesting how coaches talk about it. It's always been interesting how coaches talk about injuries. I mean, you've got this huge game in Athens Saturday night, and of course, Heupel is being very guarded with Nico Iamaliava, and, you know, he gets listed as questionable, which means anything goes.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got Kirby Smart earlier this week talking about Ernest Green, the left tackle, and how he's been dealing with shoulder stingers, and how he can't practice during the week, and how he can't bang against other linemen. And it certainly sends the message, if you're Tennessee and one of those edge rushers like James Pierce or Joshua Josephs, to really go after that shoulder if you can. But, you know, Georgia's offensive line has been in and out of the injuries, and you think of their running backs, how they've got Roderick Robinson and Branson Robinson out for the year. You've got Trevor Etienne and Cash Jones listed as questionable for this weekend. It kind of puts it on that Nate Frazier freshman. And so, you know, that's an interesting dynamic, because I think both of the strengths and weaknesses of this game Saturday night would be the defensive fronts against the opposing offensive lines. Tennessee's offensive line has been really good at running the ball, but they have not been great at protecting Iamaliava. And, of course, there have been a lot of false starts and holding penalties from those guys, too, especially the tackle.
When was the last time Georgia was facing the possibility of, with a loss, they're just sort of out of the picture? Because, I mean, was it Kirby's first year, maybe? I mean, it seems like since then, there haven't been many games where you felt like, well, if they lose, they're out of the big postseason picture, the SEC title game, or contending for the national title.
Bill, in a weird kind of way, you could make the argument that it was just 2 years ago. Now, 2 years ago, when these teams played in Athens, Georgia was number one in the AP poll,
mm-hmm.
but Georgia was number three in the first playoff rankings. Tennessee came down there ranked number one. And had Tennessee won that game, you know, Georgia would have been basically eliminated from the East. And Georgia, you know, at that time, you're only dealing with a Georgia Tech team that wasn't very good. Mm-hmm. So Georgia, you know, their schedule a couple of years ago was not great. Nothing like it is this year. And so Georgia, because they did not really have any statement games going into that game, and certainly no statement games after that game if they had lost, there was a lot of talk 2 years ago that had Tennessee won that game, you know, Georgia would have fallen out of the top four without really a chance to get back in, and it would have been very difficult.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I hadn't really thought about that, but it's because the fact that they didn't made it a little harder just to look back and see. But, I mean, now with Georgia hanging at number 12, I mean, they've got to win. If they win, we were talking about this a little while ago, if they win, how far does Tennessee fall? Is Tennessee in peril of being knocked out just with their second loss?
You know, and it's so funny, when I was a kid in the 70s and in late 70s and stuff like that, and you had the AP and UPI poll, one of the big adages, Bill, you remember this in college football, if you're going to lose
early.
September.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, you had no chance of losing a game in a Thanksgiving weekend and playing for a national championship. So I do think Tennessee would be penalized by being the two-loss team that lost the latest when you're talking about lining up Alabama, Georgia, Ole Miss, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
Provided Texas stays up there, I think Tennessee would be the odd team out. That's what a lot of people up here fear, and I think that's how it would occur. What I'm personally hoping for, because I've told you before, I think conference realignment's the devil. If Georgia wins, I sure hope Texas A&M, if they could beat Texas, I'm hoping for like 6 2-loss teams to where the SEC championship is going to be some ridiculous tiebreaker, because nobody plays each other frequently enough in this league anymore, because you got 16 teams in 8 league games, and you're gonna run the risk of just what a mess this has become. I mean, there will be teams that benefit by not going to Atlanta and having to play in that game.
Absolutely. That's just about what I was gonna get your thoughts on, because the CFP committee really appears to penalize you for a loss. Doesn't matter who it was to or where it was, you get penalized for a loss, and it's hard for me to imagine they wouldn't do that to the loser of a conference championship game.
And see, I hate the committee for infinite reasons. You know, in the old days of the BCS, you know, I was one of the Harris Poll voters, so mm-hmm. It was the Harris Poll and the coaches and the computers, and so I was a Harris Poll voter every year, and they would put my ballot out there, and now I'm an AP poll voter, which obviously is basically window dressing. It doesn't factor into anything, but, you know, there's a college poll tracker website, and you can see my ballot every single week on that thing. The committee doesn't have to reveal anything, and I'm not just saying this because I live up in Tennessee, but last week Tennessee was 7th. This week, they're 7th. BYU and Indiana each jumped 3 spots moving mm-hmm. past them. And BYU did it by beating a 4-5 Utah in very controversial
fashion.
Yes,
they were very fortunate to get that win.
Exactly. And Indiana beat a Michigan team that Texas beat by 3 touchdowns at Michigan. Indiana beat them at Indiana by 5, and Michigan's 5-5. Mm-hmm. And you're going to jump 3. Now, if you had voted Indiana and BYU ahead of Tennessee last week, that's fine. I don't have an issue with that. What I have an issue with is moving 2 teams after horrible wins up 3 spots and keeping a Tennessee team that beat Mississippi State 33-14. I know Mississippi State's not any good, but Tennessee didn't struggle with them. It just makes no sense. There's no justification moving 2 teams up 3 spots over a team, you know, when they had mediocre wins, and the team you kept the same beat a team by almost 3 touchdowns.
I'm 100% with you on that, David. I mean, there's no question. They're going to be, they're going to be howls coming, and it appears they're going to be coming from the South, from the Southeastern Conference. You know, as we get closer and closer, and even when the final 12 teams are selected for the playoff.
And Bill, one more thing that has me really concerned more than anything is, I mean, I was just talking about how ridiculous it is that I have a 16-team league trying to determine which 2 teams play for a championship game. But to your point a couple of minutes ago, when you're sitting there with a Penn State that doesn't have a win over ranked team, and Indiana that doesn't have a win over ranked team, and you're penalizing all these teams in the SEC for beating up on each other, this will absolutely send the message to the SEC coaches, ADs, administrators, everything, when they have the spring meeting to determine whether to go to 8 or 9 games,
yeah,
they're going to vote 16-0 now to stay at 8.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And why would anybody want to play a tough non-conference game?
Exactly. And it's going to invite more directional schools, more, you know, they'll load up on, you know, and I do want every SEC school to play one FCS school just to keep those budgets afloat, because they'd just shrivel up if you didn't. But, I mean, you're going to have the weakest non-conference schedules because of the message 13 people are sending.
Before we run out of time, love to get your thoughts on a couple of the games. Let's go ahead and start with the Georgia-Tennessee game we were talking about in Athens. This is, it's just about must win for both of them. It's hard to say that, you know, yeah, as we were saying, a Tennessee loss might knock them out, and Georgia knows they're out with another loss.
Yeah, I think maybe last week is still just too fresh because, and of course LSU had this opportunity too and didn't do it, but I mean, Alabama and Ole Miss absolutely played like it was an elimination game and their life depended on it. I think Georgia, even though they're beat up on the offensive line, even though they're beat up at running back, I still think they're better at quarterback. Certainly the health of Iamaliava is huge in this game, but I think Georgia wins this game. Even if Iamaliava plays in it, I just think Georgia at home, last stand type of thing, wins it by a touchdown, maybe even 10 or 14.
As a couple of other interesting ball games, Florida's playing better. Scott Strickland has said that Billy Napier will be back next year. They have gotten better from the beginning of the season. But, boy, this is a rough, rough stretch they're going through. But I think they've got a shot against LSU.
I do, too. But, again, kind of like what we were just talking about with, does Nico play? Does Lagway play? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Napier said he's been doing more and more. But you're still talking about a five-star future there that you don't want to risk him coming back too early. And we all know how hamstrings can be if you come back too early. I think if Lagway plays, this is kind of one of those asterisk games. I think if Lagway plays, it could be anybody's game. But without Lagway, I don't see how LSU loses.
Yeah. We talked a little bit about South Carolina a while ago. They've got a Missouri team that, you know, was hoping because of their schedule they'd be able to get in. I really like the Gamecocks defense, the way they've been playing lately, and they got this one in Columbia.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I like the Gamecocks in this one, potentially big. It's interesting because you saw Missouri just get clobbered at A&M, clobbered at Alabama. Will this be their third clobbering? I mean, it has that potential.
Yeah, I agree. And then the other one, any chance for Arkansas to hang with Texas in Fayetteville?
You know, Talen Green, Pittman sounded upbeat about him on the teleconference yesterday. So if Arkansas has a healthy Talen Green, it would not surprise me if they gave Texas all they wanted. I won't pick against Texas,
right.
So I think the Longhorns win this game. But if Talen Green plays, I mean, they could keep this within a 7-point game potentially, being at Reynolds Razorback.
Yeah, I think so too. It's going to be another fun weekend. And David, what are your plans for this weekend? You're going to be at Georgia, Tennessee, right?
Yes, I'll be headed down to Athens Saturday afternoon.
That one, I mean, really, just imagining the fans there in Athens at Sanford Stadium, knowing that their season is pretty much it's on the line. I think it's going to be a crazy atmosphere.
You know, and it's funny because I've made trips to Athens ever since Bo Jackson, you know, had that great senior game. You know, I was a freshman when Bo was a senior, so I saw that 24-10 win in 85, and I've been going there ever since to ball games. And Georgia was never one of the loudest places in the league, but I really think they have kind of turned that reputation around. I think that has become a much louder place to play, and I think that'll just be it was a fantastic atmosphere 2 years ago when Tennessee came in. Tennessee's going to be walking into a hornet's nest again.
Mm-hmm. Looking forward to that and the rest of the weekend. David, we really appreciate it. Great spending some time with you every week. Let everybody know how they can keep up with all of the things you've got going.
Yeah, timesfreepress.com for the articles and WGOW.com for sport talk every day from 2 to 5 Central.
All right, David. Thanks a lot. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
You guys do the same. Take care.
David Pascal joining us as he does each Thursday. Now, we'll need to go ahead and get something figured out for a couple of weeks because 2 weeks from today, hard to believe, 2 weeks from today is Thanksgiving. Oh, and Don will be proud. I went ahead and put in my order for the smoked turkey breast today.
There you go.
A lot of times I don't think about it until it's almost Thanksgiving, and many times they're already all booked up. I got him to pull some strings for me last year.
Yeah, I'm never going to complain or anything about going to Maui for the tournament this year. But I'm going to miss out on Thanksgiving. We'll be traveling back that day, so I'm hoping everybody out there who's going to get stuff like the smoked turkey,
yeah,
you just. Just enjoy it on behalf of me because I will be on a plane.
There'll be leftovers.
Yeah, you know, I'll take it.
All right, we'll get to our first break. Come on in and join us. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline as we continue here with the Thursday Drive.
If you truly care about your...
And it's been dark for about a half an hour. Bill and Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio. We'll have Tiger Takes coming up in just a couple of minutes. We'll get caught back up and get to that. But I thought, well, we'd give you an opportunity if you wanted to get through. It's been a little tough, but great to have David Pascal on. I mean, get some great insight from him. And, you know, he's been covering the SEC for a long time. And, of course, he always he'll usually bring up some memories from back when he was in school and things like that as well. But
The thing that with David that I love, and I feel the same way like Bob Holt in Arkansas, is just that throwback type of like covering the league, mm-hmm, knowing everything about the league.
Yeah, he does.
You know, it's just that doesn't happen anymore. People don't do that. Like, just that's a lost
look,
art.
I get out of touch with what's going on with schools, especially schools that Auburn isn't playing.
Correct.
You know, I mean, David keeps up with every school and knows little tidbits about each one of them.
He's
a participant. He's on for the entire SEC teleconference.
Yep.
Every week. You know, he's there and may ask a question of any of the coaches from the time they come on at 10 till it ends at 12:30.
I think it's so cool because obviously he's in a city where there's a crossover of a mm-hmm lot of different fan
right
bases.
And there's not an SEC school in his city either.
Yeah,
in Chattanooga.
That's a great gig and there used to be a lot more guys like David, you know.
Oh, yeah.
All across the conference, but you know, he's one of a kind, and it's you know, if I had to figure out anything about SEC football now or in the past, he would be probably my first call to like get an answer.
That's a good call. That would make sense. Yeah, the thing is, a lot of the guys that used to do that have retired or moved into different types of media because there's not. I mean, there's the newspapers. It's not what it used to be.
Nope. And you know, so it's still cool to see somebody doing that job and doing it as well mm-hmm as he does.
Oh yeah. All right, we'll go ahead and get to our bottom of the hour break. Our first basketball Tiger Takes with Dylan Cardwell coming up on the other side here on the Thursday Drive.
Hey, this is Jacob Goins.
It's time for our first basketball Tiger Takes here on ESPN 106.7. Tiger Takes, once again, brought to you by 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. Visit them today at 217 North College Street or book online at 12ksalon.net. And we're thrilled to have Auburn Senior Center Dylan Cardwell back with us on Tiger Takes this year. And Jacob Goins from On the Line had a chance to sit down with Dylan earlier today.
Jacob Goins with you on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader, as Tiger Takes continues as we now flip to the basketball side of Tiger Takes. It's still brought to you by 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. You can make your next reservation online at 12ksalon.net. And excited to have this guy back with us for another year of Tiger Takes. It's Dylan Cardwell, Auburn Basketball Center, joining us on ESPN 106.7. Dylan, great to have you back on the show and on the program again this year, my man.
Yes, sir. Great to be back.
Well, you guys are off to a hot start for Auburn basketball, as it's crazy that the season is already here and that it's already underway. And a couple of big wins against some smaller opponents and then the game against Houston as well. We'll get to all of those. But what was the offseason like for you guys? A lot of transfers coming in, a lot of returning guys, yourself included. What was the offseason like for this Auburn basketball team?
the off season was, you know, just like last year's. It was pretty tough, pretty hard on the body, hard on the mind. But you know, we did a great job like last year, just building that camaraderie and going to get to know each other on a deeper level. You know, with bringing in five or six new guys, it just, you have to make a better effort to kind of build a brotherhood. And so the offseason was like literally identical to the year before. And I'm looking forward to seeing the same kind of success in the locker room.
Well, there's just so much talent on this team. And I want to talk about some of the returning guys before we get into some of the newcomers. You are one of the seasoned veterans on this squad now. And, of course, Jani Broome coming back, Chaney Johnson, Chad Baker, Denver. I mean, just so many names that return for another year. What does that mean for this team and this program to have so many leaders on the squad that have been here before?
Yeah, man, it gives us a chance. That's all we need. It gives us a chance to compete at a national title, and you know that's what Auburn needs right now. And so I'm very excited, and I'm excited to know that we're returning so many guys. Like I said, that was a good core group that we had last year. The only person we're really missing, you can notice, is Jalen Williams. And so I'm excited for the opportunity that we have.
And then, of course, all the newcomers, whether it be transfer portal guys or that it be the freshmen. You've got J.P. Pegues in there. Pettiford's already made his name very well known in the orange and blue. Jakai Howard, guys like that. Miles Kelly. I mean, what did those guys bring that you maybe didn't have a year ago?
Man, just depth and lots of like crazy shooting. I know last game we didn't shoot the ball too well, but you know, these guys can really put the ball in the basket, especially a guy like Miles Kelly. UC Tahad can make some crazy shots as a freshman. I mean, these guys just add that experience shooting that we kind of lacked last year. And what's insane is that, you know, last year we were a great defensive team. This year we're even better somehow. And so we're just going to keep building on what we have.
I want to ask you, I guess, about your role, because, man, in your time at Auburn, your role, I feel like, has changed so much. I mean, you may agree or disagree with that, but I just feel like just watching and covering you individually, your role has just changed so much, whether it be a starter or off the bench or a big man or playing in a big lineup or a smaller lineup. I mean, do you feel that your role has kind of circulated around a little bit?
Yeah, it definitely has, and I've noticed it, and I think the better I've gotten, more of my and responsibilities have increased. And so this year I've been more focused on becoming a better passer. That's something kind of fun under the radar for a lot of other people. But, you know, I know my role in this year's team is to get other guys open. And, you know, last night I had four assists. But, you know, just finding open guys. Like I said, we have so many threats that can bring the can score the ball. And you know, I have the easiest job in America and getting them the ball. And so, you know, and obviously defense, you know, red is my slogan. You know, rebounding energy and defense, that's never going to change for me. But I do feel a sense of change, you know, in my role this year as far as getting guys the ball and being a playmaker. You know, that wasn't really something I was entrusted with in years prior.
What did you say your slogan was? Can you say that again?
Red, rebounding energy and defense.
I love that. That's fair. And you are so encompassed in that too. I mean, you show that on the floor every single time. And man, I think everybody does on this team, because correct me if I'm wrong, BP doesn't put you on the floor if you don't play defense and rebound and have energy, right?
Yeah, you sure are right.
And that goes for returning guys, transfer portal, freshmen, doesn't matter, man. And that's what has made Auburn basketball so special under Bruce Pearl, is he sets that standard. My guess is day one, when you walk in the door, even before you decide that you want to play for Auburn, is if you're not going to play defense, if you're not going to run, and if you're not going to do how we do, you're just not going to be a part of this team. You're not going to fit in this culture. And Dylan, I think that's what's made you guys so successful.
No, it definitely has. I remember the first thing we learned when I go to campus was defense. Like, the first thing you do when you come into this program is learn defensive schemes, the defensive play calls. And like, when we do that, you know, a week before we work on the offense. And so just a testament to the coaching staff here at Auburn as far as how much we value and emphasize defense.
Dylan Cardwell joining us on ESPN 106.7 for Tiger Takes. You'll be able to hear him every Thursday here on ESPN 106.7. This is the first time we've been able to sit down and talk with you since the heartbreaking loss against Yale in the NCAA tournament. I don't want to flash back too much because this season's off to an incredible start, but was there any sort of I guess, hunger or anger, or what was that feeling after that loss in the NCAA tournament?
That's a great question. You know, for me, it was just like, kind of like, you know, content. You know, I just don't think we were the most deserving today. I just don't think we had the right habits that we built. And I think that the summer we addressed that, the habits that we built, we want to be a better program with better habits. And so after the season at Yale, after we lost to Yale, I mean, I was very heartbroken. But at the end of the day, you know, you get what you deserve. I think that we just lost our focus, and we were too focused on, you know, the six games that we had to play rather than just taking it one at a time. And so we didn't overlook Yale and Scout at all. But I just think we were shorthanded, obviously, because one of the situations happened on court, one of our players. And, you know, it's just hard to bounce back from that. We just lost our focus.
And look, it happens, man, and that's why it's called March Madness, right? I mean, crazy things happen, and some of those smaller teams who I believe have just gotten better year after year because of things like the transfer portal and NIL. I mean, those smaller programs are getting better and better each and every year. But good news is you guys have gotten better from year to year, and you're off to a great start this year, Dylan. 3-0 is Auburn basketball, beating Vermont 94-43. Miles Kelly was the star of the show that night. Then you go on the road. I don't care what anybody says. That was a road game. Did it feel like a road game against Houston last weekend?
That was definitely a road game. Like, if you play Auburn, I mean, Houston Rockets is only like 6 minutes from campus from Houston.
6 minutes.
I mean, yeah, I don't even know how to relate that to Auburn. I mean, if you play Auburn in Atlanta for their home game, so I can't even imagine if we played anywhere closer.
Right. I mean, like, take the Purdue series, for example. At least you're playing them, I believe, in Indianapolis, and then next year it's going to be in Birmingham. But that's still a two-hour drive to Birmingham from Auburn, two and a half. I mean, downtown Houston at the Toyota Center, you guys go on the road and beat a really, really good Houston team. Walk us through that and what that was like.
Man, it was great. Obviously, you had a bunch of distractions before the game, but the way this team locked in, the night before, I mean, we all got to our hotel around, like, you know, 1 a.m. And we had a team meeting about how we're going to, you know, not let this moment define us, because you don't want, you know, a bad situation to compound. That's something that Bruce Pearl is really big on the court, is if you make a mistake on the court, just don't let it compound. And, you know, that's what we did. We had a team meeting. We're like, y'all, we have to make history tomorrow. We have to win this game. And, you know, if we lose this game, the media is going to say this, that, and the third about our program. But if we win this game, they won't say a word. And so we just all locked in. We all bought in. And I believe this Houston game is going to give us a lot of confidence. It gave us a lot of confidence on the team that we are, because, you know, you beat a historical defensive team, you know, the way we did at Houston is just unheard of. And so the mindset we had going in there was to be the most excited and the most physical team, and it's going to be a dogfight every single possession on the boards.
And that was a game where you guys were trailing for most of it. I mean, you guys got down, you know, 7, 8, 9 points and just never went away. You were the pesky team, right? You were the ones that just wouldn't go away. You eventually get a lead, hit some huge free throws down the stretch for the entire team. I mean, everybody played really, really well. And I think I know that it will end up being a resume building win. And this is not the only difficult team you got on the schedule, Dylan. You know that.
No, yeah, it's just the start of the gauntlet.
Start of a gauntlet. I think that's the best way to put it. And so you guys get literally a historical win in under Auburn basketball's history and umbrella. And then you come back home on Wednesday night and take on a Kent State team that gave you guys a little bit of a fight. Some people said, oh, this could be a hangover game. This could be a slip-up situation for Auburn. And I think you would agree this team didn't play their best, but you still win by 20-plus.
Yeah. You know, we were about 40, and we're up 30-8, but just couldn't hit shots. And, you know, kudos to those guys. I mean, it got hot. they got really, two players got hot, more specifically, you know, number 13 and then number one. I mean, those guys probably combined for, you know, 40 of their points. And so, you know, they had two guys who were scoring the points. We just couldn't shut them down. But going to this game, we knew the implications of what we needed to do because, you know, like we said, how bad would it look if we got up for Houston, but then we played down to our competition at home against Kent State? That's no disrespect to Kent State. But, you know, Kent State's one of those teams that has hung around, you know, with these Power 5 schools when they've played them. And so we knew how good they were coming in.
And I'm sure it was nice to get back home for a little bit as you had the Kent State game at home. You've got UNA coming up on Monday. Then you guys hit the plains. You're back out on a nice little trip, Dylan. You looking forward to hitting a little nicer weather, huh, as you guys are going to be playing some really, really good teams coming up.
Oh, yeah, nice weather with even crazier, you know, setting. I love the beach. I'm going to try to go to Maui. It's a blessing to be able to go there. My whole family's coming. I've never been to Hawaii.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was more of a business trip for me. My family and my family have a great time. Obviously, we're going to have a great time competing. But, you know, the Gauntlet Series we got coming up, you know, Iowa State is literally just identical to Houston. And so we have to be the most excited team, most physical team, and we got to be sharp.
Want to ask you one more thing before we let you get out of here. Again, talking with Dylan Cardwell for Tiger Takes on ESPN 106.7, brought to you by 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. Are you more on the side of getting in the starting rotation and being with Janai, or are you just embracing whatever role they have you in? Because I feel like it could change night in, night out, Dylan.
Yeah, shoot. I enjoy starting just because it just allows me just to get going earlier. You know, it's kind of easy to start. I thought it'd be harder. But I mean, like mentally, it's refreshing to start. You know, coming off the bench, you know, when you watch the game, you can't help but, you know, kind of like scout the team that while you're playing.
Yeah.
And you start to overthink, start to overcomplicate things, rather than just, you know, letting it flow, letting it come naturally. And so, you know, starting is fun and I enjoy it. But whatever the team asks me to do, I'll do, because at the end of the day, it's not about me. It's about winning this championship. So.
Man, how cool is it to have your brother a part of this program now, a part of the team as a freshman? Yeah. How cool is that for you?
Man, it's really cool. You know, I'm just grateful that he has this opportunity in front of him. You know, it's a huge blessing. And I just can't believe that he's on the team with me. Because, you know, last year he was just sitting around the house seeing what he was going to do. And, you know, now he's on the team at Auburn. So he's a very hard worker. He's excited for his opportunity. And, you know, I just tell him every day, make the most of it.
Yeah, that's right. And I'm sure your family is just so proud of both of you. And now they get to watch both of you be a part of what is a really, really good basketball team. You guys are up to number 5 in the country now as you get ready for UNA on Monday and then head down to the Maui Invitational. Dylan Cardwell, Auburn Basketball Center, joining us here on ESPN 106.7 for Tiger Takes. It's brought to you by 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. Dylan, always appreciate your time, man. We're looking forward to a lot of fun this season here on ESPN. We appreciate your time. And War Eagle.
Yes, sir. Thank you, War Eagle.
And our thanks to Dylan Cardwell for joining us each week for Tiger Takes. That'll be each Thursday at 5:30 here on The Drive on ESPN 106.7. Tiger Takes brought to you by 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. Call to book your next appointment, 334-209-2900. We'll get to our final break here on the Thursday Drive. Stick with us as we continue.